From within the shadow of the Golden Circle Cannery in beautiful downtown Northgate, it's the Blather on Ratbag Radio. Dave Riley speaking. In today's edition of the Blather, we have a special opportunity for people to get some culture. Because in today's edition of the Blather, we interview Aslan McClellan, who is a Melbourne-based artist of some notoriety recently, because his artwork was stolen by the Victorian police. The offending piece of artwork was an Australian flag, which Aslan had burnt and ripped and stuck outside a inner-city gallery with the slogan, "Proudly un-Australian," attached to it. The artwork was deemed offensive by the Victorian police, confiscated, and the whole issue of freedom of speech has been raised as a consequence, especially as a consequence in the context of these protests against the Danish cartoons. So if you want to learn more about this particular instance, make certain you listen to our upcoming interview here on the Blather. For those inspired by the campaign, make certain you go to the Ratbag Radio website at ratbagradio.blogspot.com. That's ratbagradio.blogspot.com, and you'll find a petition you can download and circulate. You can also find the URL for online petition to support Aslan McClellan's right to free speech. So without getting caught up in all these little domestic details, let's go straight to the interview, shall we?
I did a web search on your name, and you prop up a few times. Yeah. Around the same sort of issue. Do you make a habit of this?
Well, that's what I've been told. People in the media seem to love label me as the controversial Melbourne artist, but I think it's probably only controversial because it's, you know, actively criticising the state. And in Melbourne, in Melbourne art scene, that's pretty unheard of. But I'm not big noting myself by any means. Just a sort of indication of where we're at. I mean, just over the last couple of years, there's been I've experienced about 5 separate cases of censorship in some form or another. It's always political, so, and yeah, this recent case has probably been one of the most high-profile ones.
Obviously, you try to make your art political, but you also create a certain degree of potency.
Just trying to get the issues, just trying to address the issues, and, you know, in the sense of being a counter to sort of the Herald Sun program, you know, which is just, you know, spouting Rupert Murdoch's agenda. So I've had a bit of a history with that. At this point, I think people aren't terribly surprised by what I do, but they just sort of, you know, roll their eyeballs back in their sockets and go, "Here we go again." But, you know, the media loves it. They're, you know, a bunch of parasites. They love a juicy, scandalous story. So they're always quick to, you know, make the most of it, I think.
Okay, you were yesterday's news, I suppose. Well, it was 3 or 4 days ago. But what's the situation now? The police still hold your exhibit, the burnt Australian flag, and are charges going to be laid?
Interesting you call at this moment, because just this morning I finally had my long-awaited interview with the police, and it was an alarmingly amicable interview, and they actually gave me the flag back.
Oh, good.
That's not to say that they're not still looking to charge me. I mean, they told me it was a matter, it was up to their legals at this point to see whether or not I'll be charged with offensive behaviour or whatever the hell they think they're going to come up with, and that could take a while. But from what I gather, and all the lawyers I've spoken to, and I've spoken to a fair few in Sydney and Melbourne and so forth, Rob Starry in Melbourne has been quite supportive. They said that the police, if anyone was sort of acting outside the law, was probably the police, and they're probably just sort of doing an about-face turn, just trying to sort of save their face in an embarrassing situation, because, as we all know by now, the burning of the flag is not illegal, thanks to John Howard's statement the other week, which is a relief for me. But I was already aware of that because, you know, I sort of did some research on the flag burning which happened at Melbourne University a few years ago at the start of the Iraq War, where, you know, similar sort of debate was had about whether the flag burning was illegal or not. You know, a lot of, you know, people like John Anderson were trying to introduce, you know, laws to prohibit that, but John Howard pretty much said the same thing then as he did now, which was, you know, he finds it offensive, but he begrudgingly sort of lets it happen.
The incident that you have been caught up in wasn't isolated. There was a flag burning here at Brisbane on Australia Day, Invasion Day here.
Yeah.
And there was a one that followed the riots in Cronulla.
That's right.
This is, well, it's new vogue, almost, in the not so much in the art world, but as a political statement. You've taken it into graphic illustration, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, it's by no means a new sort of concept, but I still think it's a relatively potent one and something people should have the right to do. Yeah, I mean, I'm aware of the other incidents. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, to be honest. But clearly, there's a lot of reasons for people to sort of want to do that these days. I mean, there always has been, but particularly, you know, our involvement in Iraq and whatnot, among other things. Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking about that case in Cronulla. I have been talking about that sort of in the media and to journalists and whatnot, and I think the difference there was that the reason the poor kid got charged, even though I don't agree with it, was that the flag was stolen property.
From the RSL, yeah.
Yeah, whereas this incident with me was actually my flag, which I bought and set fire to on my own property. and, you know, I paid for the billboard space at the exhibition, at the gallery. So I'm struggling to see what laws I've actually broken, but it's the debate that's being had at the moment.
My feeling was that after the riot in Cronulla, it became an obvious sort of statement, not so much, it sort of kind of followed on, because here were all these people asserting their gross ochreism.
Yeah.
and their racist stance around that thing, and they clothed themselves in the Australian flag, then it had to be some sort of statement around what it meant to be un-Australian, because these bots were so keen to prove how Australian they were.
Exactly. I mean, I'd planned a show before the Cronulla riots happened, but, you know, that was just more fuel to add to the fire, so to speak, because obviously a lot of people on the left, Indigenous Australians, Muslim Australians, would find the actions of Cronulla, particularly, you know, the use of the flag in that way, particularly offensive and just offensive in general. I mean, I think, I don't think it needs to be said what that flag represents for so many people, such as the Indigenous of this country. It's unquestionably offensive because of what it represents. I guess I shouldn't be surprised when there is so much sort of opposition to something like that, but, you know.
But what you did was offensive to a lot of people.
Well, of course it was, but it boils down to subjectivity, and, you know, I've had to state my case many times. You know, I don't actually hate Australia or Australians, so to speak, but, you know, I've got a problem with sort of rabid nationalism, the exploits of the Howard government, and Australia's history in general, in terms of its treatment of its Indigenous and so forth.
Well, actually, I saw in one comment you made that you pointed to the irony where the Australian flag is used to sell products and as a capitalist sort of projection. That's okay, and that's supposedly not offensive.
I've done so many interviews, but yeah. I mean, look, it's used for... I mean, I was reading in the paper today, you know, it's quite well. I mean, that flag has been flown in Iraq, you know, in Afghanistan with our troops, and, you know, I mean, that's... I find that grossly offensive, but we don't have... people removing those flags, and of course, you know, Cronulla riots. I mean, you know, is every one of those yahoos going to be charged for, you know, disgracing the flag or something?
This also brings us round to the question of what is offensive and what you should do about it, and the question of censorship, because they're basically trying to censor you, aren't they?
Of course.
Yeah. Now, this comes up to this issue of the cartoons published in the Danish newspaper.
Yeah.
Which are indeed offensive to most Muslims, I would think, in the world.
Yeah.
As the protests indicate. So how do you rate your political activity compared to, and your claim to be not censored and your claim to free speech, with the sort of debate that has been generated around these Muhammad cartoons?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm a firm believer in free speech. I can't really think of a situation where I would sort of advocate censorship unless it was something really severe, like dealing with child pornography or something but I need to state that I was born a Muslim. I mean, I'm an Australian citizen, but my mother's Malaysian. But same token, I think whoever artists, cartoonists, writers, what have you, I think they should be allowed to sort of state their case and have their two cents, and people should be able to make up their own minds whether or not... I think people should have the choice to be able to view these sorts of things. But also, I mean, I think anyone who's involved in something that's obviously going to be extremely sensitive when you're dealing with matters such as religion, I think they need to be fully aware of what they're getting into and need to be prepared to suffer any sort of backlash. You know, we couldn't have a greater example or benchmark case than Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses back in 88. I mean, I'm not too young to remember that and how huge that was. That's what I think.
You're saying, of course, that something that is offensive, even to a lot of people, even possibly to a majority of people, isn't enough to warrant censorship of it, right?
Well, I mean, I think it's very patronising to sort of the general public to say to them that you're too sensitive, too stupid, or too whatever to be able to make up your own mind for certain issues. I mean, the government does that to us every day. It's a bit too authoritarian for my liking. But, you know, this is not to say that, of course, there's going to be a hell of a lot of people that are going to be offended by it, but I don't think toning someone to death or something is the right way to go about it either, but my opinion.
If people objected to your work, which, let's say, some did, or the previous works, you wouldn't oppose them picketing the galleries or these sorts of things? You think?
Well, look, I mean, if that's what they want to do, that's fine. There always has been criticism of my sort of public works, and you know I'll always expect that because I mean I think if you take any strong political stance, whatever side of the curtain you fall on, you're going to offend someone somewhere in the world. This is just the way politics is. Unfortunately, I'll always expect criticism, but I think things like state intervention, where the police take the liberty upon themselves to deem an artwork too offensive for the public to see before they even investigate or have any sort of communication with myself or the gallery, I mean, I think that's just far too totalitarian for my liking.
This issue, but probably more so in a previous fracas that you got involved in, raised an issue of the freedom of the artist to create the works that they have in their imagination, because part of the debate previously was on the question that you were creating potent political art that were offensive to people, that also was being funded by the Australian taxpayer.
Yeah, well, okay, that's another sort of prickly issue which the Andrew Bolts of the world will always gain leverage on. That's just an unfortunate sort of symptom, I think, of conservative Australia. The Bolts are always going to get mileage out of how much money the Aussie battlers are spending on things like artwork. The debate never seems to come when we're talking about money going towards the military or money taken away from education. It's always rat bag artists. It's such a relevant, I think, at the end of the day, sort of scapegoat.
That's true. What I note over, well, my so many years of been involved in whatever politics or art and those sorts of things, is that what the funding for artists have created is a whole lot of artists that are willing not to cross certain political boundaries for fear that they have their funding withdrawn. It must be a major problem in the graphic arts, but it certainly is in the written arts.
Yeah. I mean, you will get self-censorship, and Melbourne is a particularly sort of lively art, has a particularly lively art community in the sense that there's so many artists and so many artists run spaces and galleries and a lot of people enjoy practice or enjoy viewing it. So you have, you do have a lot of people that, yeah, I mean, it's particularly competitive and, you know, of course artists don't have a hell of a lot of money, so they are applying for all the grants and opportunities that are available to them. And of course the state isn't going to fund politically charged work or, you know, work that's criticising them. You know, they're always going to go for the sort of softer option, and unfortunately I think that affects the way a lot of people make work. And with the introduction of the sedition laws as well, you know, I think we're going to see a whole lot of self-censorship. We probably are at the moment. You know, the deeper we go, the more we'll probably see.
I'm talking to you at work. I gather that you're not earning a full-time living from art because obviously you're not getting funded for works like this.
I'm not earning a penny from art. I'm losing incredible amounts of money over it. But yeah, that's the reality for most of us. We have to, you know, work in kitchens or in restaurants or cafes, wherever the hell we can, because having a degree in fine art isn't exactly it's probably what Brendan Nelson would call a latte course, or when he was the education minister. join the military or something if I want to make some money.
But the other related question is that there's a bit of campaign being generated in support of you. What's a fallout? I know there's a petition being circulated nationally. What other sort of campaign activities have been fostered?
I was talking to the two full-time members of Resistance in Melbourne over the last couple of days, and that's possibly the petition you're talking about. And I mean, I think they're keen not to just sort of have it for the art community, but just the community in general in terms of free speech, which, you know, I think is going to affect everyone. But I mean, I've had a lot of good lawyers on my side. NAVA, the National Association for Visual Arts in Sydney, has been very, very supportive. And this is not the only time they have been. Tamara Winnicoff, who's, I forget her exact role in NAVA, but she's been very vocal about condemning the police actions and has helped, has written media releases and so forth and done a lot of press herself, along with the gallery, and hopefully will continue to sort of keep it up, because obviously I don't think it's a problem that's going to go away anytime soon.
The incident that was the fracas around this flag is indicative of a much broader attack on democratic rights, I would think, in the context of this war on terrorism.
Yeah.
And also a major promotion of this new nationalism that Howard's so keen on. And a Labor Party too.
Well, yeah, the Labor Party, I mean, God, it'd be great if we actually had a party that presented us with an alternative. But part of the sort of overwhelming, demoralising problem we're facing at the moment. But, you know, hopefully things like this will unify people, and, you know, people will eventually get the picture and be a bit more vocal about things.
When you did the burnt flag thing and put it outside the gallery, did you have a particular artist statement in mind?
Artist statement?
Yeah, sometimes you attach a little statement.
Yeah, I did a prior media release, which was obviously released the same day as the... Well, actually, I think it was even released before, slightly before the exhibition. I was actually overseas at the time the exhibition sort of came about, and also Brianna Pike from Resistance also wrote a supporting media release, which we released together through the gallery, through an email list, and we stuck to our guns. You know, nothing has changed. We've had nothing to hide, and it's a bit hard to anticipate how these things are going to pan out. I mean, I wasn't expecting a completely smooth ride where everyone would be patting me on the back and saying well done. The police intervention was definitely a surprise, but Resistance has been great, and they've since released another media release, and I've also written a few more things, which I've posted on my website, and obviously been speaking to a lot of media about it. So yeah, I guess we'll see how it drags out. Maybe the police are hoping it'll just drag out till it completely, you know, falls over on its ass. I mean, I'm sure they would love that, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
The other core issue is probably the effect. What I was getting at was just that you're trying to make a statement about what it means to be an Australian. And what I was thinking about is that what the image seemed to suggest to me, that you wanted to project this idea that it's being claiming to be Australian today is a very shameful thing because of the country does.
Definitely got a hell of a lot of things to be ashamed of. You know, things I was just talking about, you know, recent things such as wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and how government's treatment of refugees, but also, you know, in the broader history, treatment of Aboriginal people over the last 200 odd years or so. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a hell of a lot of things to be ashamed about. And
this gets tied with the conscious approach, particularly by Howard, but the opposition's not free of it, to the effect that certain acts are un-Australian acts, like yours, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like sneaking into the country.
Yeah.
You know, that's un-Australian.
Exactly.
And then we got this, it gets rather nebulous and say, like, you know, what they've been at the present time. Being a Muslim is also un-Australian.
Yeah, well, it would seem so these days, definitely.
So that the category of un-Australianness has really been enlarged over the last, well, maybe 5, 10 years, quite consciously.
Yeah.
And now includes you.
I don't know.
Sadly un-Australian. I think that had something to do with... Wasn't that a label that used on your work at one stage?
Wasn't there a what, sorry?
Wasn't that a label used on your work at one stage, Proudly Un Australia?
Well, that was always the name of the show, and the Trocadero, the gallery, had made up a sign to complement the work, but because it was taken down sort of immediately after it was put up, the sign never got used. But it has always been known as Proudly Un Australian, and probably will be for quite some time.
This is a gallery in the main street of Footscray, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a major multicultural centre in Melbourne.
Yes, it is.
And with a large Vietnamese population, Somali, Croats, Greek, Italians, all this sorts of thing.
Mm. And I think part of the police's excuse was that, you know, because it was such a hot pot of racial difference, I don't know what you want to call it, that they seemed to be able to justify the removal of the work. Just because of their concern about, you know, public safety and all that sort of thing. But again, I mean, I would state that I didn't actually receive any criticism or hate mail until after the actual removal of the work, once you know, the police sort of conflated the issue. Again, I think it's, you know, very condescending to sort of say to the public, you can't see this because we need to protect you from it. I really think people should be able to decide for themselves.
What's supposed to unite multiculturalism is a dedication to Australia. You can do what you like, in the sense you can be as exotic as you like, but as long as you defer to the Australian nation, that is, go along with what we decide, like sending troops to Iraq or banning refugees from the country.
I mean, the perception I always got growing up, because, you know, the term un-Australian has been around as long as I can remember, was that, you know, Australia was all about free and democratic values and, you know, respecting everyone's sort of beliefs and whatnot, but I think it's veered far away from that.
It's almost of what's required is to a burgeoning new movement of an Australianness, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That rather than rides on the sheep's back, is determined to make some principled statements about that in fact, I mean, this goes back to a slogan, I think, of the Socialist Alliance, that another Australia is possible.
Yeah, yeah.
That an un-Australian Australia as possible, and this is what we would strive to create.
You know, that was one of the key points of the work. Like any of the works I do, really, is to sort of, you know, rally, and sort of gain the support of people, get some unity going.
Got any plans for further work or any?
Oh look, yeah, I've always got a million sort of plans in the pipeline. It's just a matter of sort of waiting for the opportune moment for it to arise. We've got the Next Wave Festival in Melbourne next month, which is a pretty huge arts festival, which coincides with the Commonwealth Games.
That would be interesting, yes.
Yeah, well, obviously, it'll be an interesting thing in itself, just having the world focus on Melbourne for a couple of weeks and seeing the difference in security and whatnot. But yeah, there's an opportunity to raise some issues, perhaps, if they, you know, if it doesn't get shut down immediately. And yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, it's getting, as you can probably imagine, it's getting harder and harder for me to sort of do this sort of work. One, through sort of gaining a name for myself as a rat bag, and two, just, you know, the society, at least in Melbourne, is becoming so oppressive. And first reaction is always shut it down before, you know, any trouble starts. But then there's, you know, getting back to the whole broader question of what is art. I mean, I remember one of my favourite pieces, and, you know, I'm sure many people would debate whether or not it was art or not, but the No War slogan that was painted on the side of the Opera House.
Yeah.
A very effective way of getting a message across in a sort of creative way, creative and simple way. And I believe they won some sort of art prize after that, which some people were quite unhappy about, because they defiled, you know, a cultural landmark. But, you know, I think all that sort of stuff is really important and should always happen.
It certainly was a potent image as a photograph, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, got all around the world.
And let's say, I was checking out the images of your work. It looked up there above the gallery there in the streets of Footscray.
Mm.
Let's hope, will it go back up again if...
Well, okay, this is...
That's a technicality, I suppose, but...
I mean, I've just received it. I've just gotten it back today, and I think I need to speak to someone like Rob Starry first before I do something like that. I mean, I've had sort of, I've had a lot of advice given to me about sort of course of action I can take, like in terms of actually charging the police myself. But one, I don't have a hell of a lot of money. Two, I'm already quite sort of drained by the whole affair. You know, first and foremost, I'll be happy to sort of escape getting charged, can't afford that sort of thing. But you know, I did sort of particularly ask the police today when they gave the flag back. I just sort of laid it all out hypothetically. I said, you know, what would happen if I was to hang the work up again in the gallery? And they pretty much hinted that the same thing would happen, that they would probably have to intervene. Which, you know, doesn't. And in the terms of the debate that's been going on over the last few weeks, it the police don't seem to have moved an inch on where, you know, if anything they've learned, and you know what's illegal and what's not. So yeah, I really need to get some advice on that, I think.
That's all we have for today. I hope you like our little escapade into the business of interviewing, despite the roughness of some of our audio. We will do more of the same and improve as finances and skills allow. In the meantime, make certain you keep tuned, if that's the right word for web activity, keep tuned to Ratbag Radio by subscribing to the podcast, which you can do from the webpage, ratbagradio.blogspot.com. That's ratbagradio.blogspot.com. And you can contact Ratbag Radio at ratbagradio@yahoo.com.au. That's ratbagradio@yahoo.com.au. So if you don't want to know how to do it, all you need is one flag, a box of matches, and a little recipe for being proudly an Australian. And here we go. It goes all coloured. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Black smoke. Ooh, smelly. Ooh, oops. They do burn. The blue bits burn better than the other bits. Wonder how the Union Jack goes. Red and white. The Union Jack bits are harder to light. Ooh, here we go, Ooh, got a nice red flame on the red Union Jack. Oops, ooh, they're on the jack. Ah, there you are. My very own artwork. My symbol of un-Australianism. Put that up on the wall.